D-Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. A reminder, Silly Underdog Picks is coming up next. If you want to represent the people, be listening for the cue to call at 615-737-1025. If you represent the people and you win, you will win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach and Rise Against at First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, October 1st. Willie Donick informs me that our representative won last week, picking Eddie Casey. George's Bowling Green.
The Falcons, 2-1.
So?
As the home dog, knocked off Liberty.
That could be you.
Eddie George.
Liberty.
2-7. Moving up to the MAC.
A little Maction. Who doesn't love a little Maction? You know who also loves some Maction? Jonathan Hutton.
Let's go.
I think he does. From Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Do you love some Maction, Hutton?
Right place and time.
Exactly.
If you have some action on Maction, absolutely.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Why
so
not?
Since we're talking college football, let's stay on college football. I have two questions for you. One about Tennessee and one about Vanderbilt. The question go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, go ahead. Question, which one?
Let's start with Tennessee.
They're a college football playoff team.
Well, I was just about to ask you where Tennessee's CFP hopes were following the loss to Georgia. You can go ahead and answer that question now.
Yeah, man. I look, it's going to be fascinating if, they're a three-loss team and you have a two-loss team ahead of them with the new way that they are analyzing and inputting strength of schedule without the tweaks they've made to that. I think it benefits Tennessee with what they've done. So, look, the way they played that game against Georgia and the improvement that we've seen just with the quarterback, downfield passing game, all of it, the game was fantastic, nearly identical to the Alabama game from 2022. And, I mean, even from the early start by Tennessee, all the big plays, great play by the other quarter. The only difference was Tennessee won the game against Bama. And Georgia looks like the national championship contender. Tennessee is a college football playoff team right now. And, I mean, hats off to what they've done. They did everything but win that game. And I like what I've seen. Given the fact that they were down their two corners, they're going to continue to be tested there in the secondary. But the offense has shown they can push the ball and score a lot of points. So, I mean, that's finally saw some big plays with the return game. I mean, there's a lot of positives despite the fact that Georgia continues to win because they're Georgia and they're still right there. I was wrong about them slipping. It's incredible what they've done. And when you also include, Adam, the game last year against Bama and what Kirby Smart is able to do despite adversity, just the fantastic game top to bottom. Vanderbilt can be a college football playoff contender. There is no reason why they can't be Alabama or South Carolina from last year, from what I've seen. And the gauntlet that they have coming up, there's a big schedule ahead of them. But get to Bama 5-0 and win that game, they're the media darling of the country, and Pavia's being discussed as a Heisman candidate. So they can be a much bigger discussion than where they are now. And I get it. Hey, they beat South Carolina. They did it with Sellers getting hurt. But I'm here to tell you, they're better than their ranking right now. And they went on the road and won against number 11 in the SEC. And Vanderbilt is ranked in the top 25 in September. Not November, it's September. So, I mean, don't tell them they can't do something because they'll show up and get it done.
Michael, you answered my question. My question to you was going to be, what will it take for Vanderbilt to be considered this season's version of Indiana?
Yeah, well, they won't be considered this year's version of Indiana. No one's going to debate their schedule if they're on the precipice of knocking on the door of the playoffs.
True.
No one's going to. So no one can use that against them. That was the argument against Indiana, is who they've played. Vanderbilt's producing against a gauntlet of a Southeastern Conference schedule. So they would have proven that they deserve to be there. That's why South Carolina they had all that momentum leading up to the push for the playoff against the argument for or making the argument against a team like Indiana. Bama the same way, thinking about a team like SMU. So, yeah, Vanderbilt would be there. And it's crazy to say that, but, I mean, it's more than Pavia, but, man, have they taken on the mentality of both he and Clark Lea. It's a tremendous job. And I realize it's early in the season, but it's early in the season and Vanderbilt's being discussed like this. That's some good college football being played in Tennessee.
Now, with that being said, Hutt, we had a sort of a funny, what would you call it, hypothetical.
Yeah.
If Vanderbilt and Tennessee played right now, if they played this weekend, what would be the line in the game?
Where's the game being played?
It's played in Knoxville.
Tennessee's favored by 4 or 5.
I thought it would Georgia. Be double digits. I thought it would be 10 and a half.
So the perception is that Tennessee went toe-to-toe with Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
They were, 3.5-point dog to Georgia in that game. Vanderbilt, the perception is they went on the road and Sellers got hurt, so they won.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's Vanderbilt is they don't jump off the page to you if you just look at a stat sheet. They just do everything consistently well, and for the first time, guys, they compete in the trenches on defense. They've got guys, they got players up front that can play some SEC ball. So, I sound like a front runner here for them, and I'm all in on Van. How can you not be, given what we saw last year, and the momentum has carried over to this year, where they're not just winning. I mean, they are taking care of business, and with an exclamation mark.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a much tighter game. Tennessee fans didn't want to play Vandy when they did last year, so I wouldn't want to play them. If that's the case, I wouldn't want to play them this year, despite taking care of business here in Nashville for the Vols.
Now let's transition to the Titans, obviously, coming off of not impressive
speaking of, that's
loss.
Where the good football in Tennessee has stopped. Now we're headed to the opposite end.
Exactly. Now, looking at this team, how much can Cam Ward actually help them this year? Or is it just about developing him? Because if you look at this roster from top to bottom, we all know it's not the greatest roster. But can he be enough to help this team? Or is this just a, hey, this is a development year for you to get you better as a quarterback as we add, talent to the roster?
I mean, at this stage, he helps this team by developing into the quarterback that's ready to go in year two.
Mm-hmm.
Under what regime, I have no idea, coaching staff. But he also helps this team by lifting the play of the rookies around him, and we see other players develop with him. I think it's more than him in how Borgonzi has structured this group. It's very similar to what the Chiefs did whenever they drafted Mahomes and brought him in. I know they set out the first year, but they end up pairing him with a tight end. They got a wide receiver here. They bulk up on some defense. I mean, this is it's not hard to flip around a team, Mace, in a rebuild, but this is a multi-year deal here, because of the depth and the issues and not hitting on draft picks. So, this is another off-season acquisition phase away from actually seeing what can be.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got how does he help this team? He develops players around him. He leads. He already is the leader, but the unquestioned leader that is consistent in what he says, what he does, and how he approaches week in and week out. And he also helps this team by not allowing others to quit around him. It's gonna be a long year based on what we've seen, man. And he's gonna take a beating. So the trials and tribulations are ahead. They're just getting started.
Now Blake Bedingfield came out with an article on PaulKoharski.com, setting up the table already for potential moves that the Titans can make. When should, even though the table is being set by Blake Bedingfield, I'm not saying the Titans are doing that. But obviously he is, and I'm sure there are a lot of Titan fans that are already thinking about, hey, we need to. This is the people we need to trade. We need to start getting some more assets for this year's draft and potentially next year's draft. When should they start thinking about that?
Well, right around the trade deadline. And you would just wait on the offers and see what teams are willing to offer to bring a player in. I mean, I don't recall defensive tackles being moved all that often at the trade deadline. But yeah, I mean, it's either that or you do it like leading up to the NFL draft for draft capital. You don't do it after the draft. But Mace, they don't have many pieces to do that with. And they just gave Simmons a bump, didn't they, in pay?
Yeah, to my understanding, it was money already owed, but they just kind of moved it around a little bit, to my understanding.
They gave cash on hand. They gave him some cash up, mm-hmm. cash up front or something. I just saw that headline. I didn't read that in depth, so I apologize. But that doesn't signal to me a move that says you're going to move him. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's the first that comes to mind and one of the very few, and they just extended Hooker. He was another trade asset of value in the draft. So, I mean, there's not too many left unless you're going to start trading some of your young pieces that you drafted and invested in, and I don't see that happening.
Talking to Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. So, Hut, we talked last week about L'Jarius Sneed. I think there was some disappointment that they didn't let him go into the second half, but
yeah.
I was surprised that it went full throttle the other way on a really hot day, and now he's got a back ailment. I'm concerned about that. I still would like to know a little bit more of what the process has been, because in other sports in particular, they're so careful about these things. And so it's like they abandoned the plan. They went from, hey, let's be careful.
I know.
Let's ratchet up step by step to let's throw him in there and let's have him chase Davante Adams all over the field for the whole game in 90-degree weather on turf. That was a major risk to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the back issue is from the 90-degree weather. I know what you're saying, though, on the risk. Let's go back to the plan where it started. What plan has him play the first half and not the second? Like, you know, it's just like, oh, he played some long drives. And I was like, well, I mean.
It's definitely outside the box thinking.
I don't understand that, especially in the type of game that, I mean, even in the preseason, if you're playing some of your players, like you want to go two possessions. Well, if the first possession is a 13-play drive, the dude's not going to play the second. And if it's two straight three and outs, maybe they play a third. You know, there's some flexibility there. And then to go the opposite end, I mean, it just sounds like they, on one game, again, this is just perception. One game they went with their plan. Game two, they went with his. Like, that's what it looks like. I don't know why you would go the other way. Or it's flip-flopped. But it certainly didn't feel like that based on what he said post-game. But Willie, they're a much better team with him on the field. But, I mean, if he's going to play, he's going to get hurt. I mean, that's just kind of – I expect that to happen.
I think we're all very concerned.
Even if he's healthy.
We'll believe it when we see it that he can last. But in the meantime, I equate it to when you see a pitcher, if you're really going to use the term pitch count, when you watch a pitcher coming back from an injury, especially one that's been out for a long time, they're going to go – you know, three innings, and then they're going to go five innings, et cetera, right? And so they went from three innings to let's play the whole game, and that's just not what you would do. And I know you can't do this on the minor league level, but if you're going to be outside the box and you're going to be modern with sports science, they seem to completely take a different approach in the second game. I don't know if that's the agent. I don't know if that's Sneed lobbying, et cetera, but – it's been thrown out by more than one person from the top, from the Titans, the coaches anyway, of sometimes you have to protect the player from himself. If he gets hurt and blows himself out in week three or four, where are you?
And, I mean, they're already screwed, let's put it that way. And now, I mean, maybe they just went into it knowing we have to have him to match up. We need a one-on-one with Davante Adams because we still have to worry about Puka Nacua. Because offensively, those are the two targets for Stafford, and that was it. I mean, by far, those were the two main targets, and they want to man him up. Again, I don't know. I don't understand the plan where he played half the game. So it's hard for me to understand what was going on full throttle if you're on a pitch count 1 week and all of a sudden you miraculously get better, sounds like he felt good because he only played half the game. But, I mean, guys are going to get injured and get hurt, but I just assume he's always hurt. And if you're out there, you're out there. Like, there's no – if you're out there on the island for his position, man, like, I don't want to play half the game. I got to get into a rhythm and a flow, because especially at that spot where there's going to be a ton of up and downs. I'm sure he wanted to play the full game. And I mean, we'll see if he can push through this. But yeah, it's not a good sign. And it's not a good sign with or without him, given some of the possessions that we've seen, the long drives and the second halves where the offense isn't helping.
Latham is still not practicing.
Yeah.
If he's not out there again on Sunday, which I think it looks like there's a pretty decent chance that that's the case, and they have to try to make it work with the scraps that they have. How much better can it look, given that it's not the Rams or the Broncos front? And the Colts are no slouch, no question. They're playing great, confident wise, but can they maybe do a little bit better job of protecting Ward?
Well, they should. I mean, you're right about comparing the other two pass rushes, because the Colts have just three sacks this season. You know, can the Titans actually protect Ward? And can he get the ball out quickly? You know, they also need chunk yardage from Tony Pollard. You know, that he ran well last week, but Pollard, I mean, he now has 38 carries this season, Willie. He's the fourth most in the NFL for running backs. But chunk yardage is needed from him. And right now, only two of his carries have gained more than 10 yards, 10 or more yards. That's a total of two carries of his total. And 26 players in the NFL have more carries that have produced more yardage than what he has. But he has the fourth most touches. Like, he's got to be more of a focus, too, for Ward to have some options. But ultimately, it's the 3rd and 9 plus. You know, like, teams are going to tee off on him, no matter if they're starting J.C. Latham or not, if this offense can't do more than 2 yards per play on first and second down. And it can't even have a big play in the second half. I mean, they didn't have a single play of 20 or more yards passing or 10 or more yards rushing in the second half this past week. I mean, they can't do anything. So the pass rush is just going to pin their ears back at that point, knowing you have to pass if you're trailing. They play good in the first half, and then it all hits the fan. It's not good for Cam Ward is the answer if Latham can't play, but it wasn't good if he was in there.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Hutton, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, looking forward to it, and looking forward to silly underdog picks.
What a
Who's
great
leading the competition? Who is leading this competition?
Hal Gill. Rookie. Hal Gill is 1-2 with 17.5 points. Okay. Derek Mason is in second place at 1-2 with 15.5 points.
Mm-hmm.
I am 2-1, but in third place with 10.5 points. Okay. And Chris Sanders is 0-3 with 0 points.
And Willie is 3-0.
No, he's the commish.
Willie's commish. Always the winner.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know.
He's always
He always wins.
Yeah, he's always
House
winning.
Always wins.
That's right. That's
I heard that somewhere.
That's why I don't go to casinos.
I learned that the hard way.
Thank you, Hutton.
All right, see you guys.
Yep.
What a great segue. Week 4 of Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket is coming up next. We will make our selections on the other side. We will also let you know when you can call and represent the people. And as I said, if you represent the people and win, which did happen last week, you will win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach and Rise Against at First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, October 1st. Silly Underdog Picks is next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.